into the fire. I've fallen into the fire. Into the fire. Into the fire.
Glam Metalcast discusses Metal Unplugged.
Hey, I got an idea. Let's unplug. Thanks, Tesla. What's metal about that? So now all the metal bands are playing acoustic songs. Extreme.
More than words.
Mr. Big.
Just to be the next to be with you.
You. And then being this whole unspoken thing on MTV, like, if you can't unplug, you're not really a musician.
Well, we got Metal Mike here. I'm with Ryan. Ryan, Metal Unplugged, man. What do you think?
I think it's really awesome. I think it kind of is one of those things that may have made a band sink or swim in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed when these rockers would go acoustic and really show their true talents at this level. Unfortunately, some bands that didn't translate that well into this realm, but some of them, let's just say I have some honorable mentions that I left off that I really loved the bands and I left them off because of that.
Yeah.
Could have been song choices or it could have been performance. We'll see. But yeah, very interesting.
Well, one thing, you know, Dee Snider said, and I don't always agree with everything Dee Snider says, but one thing that was going on at MTV, I would say, in the early 90s was, it was that snobbish point of view that, you know, like, you know, all musicians should be able to play unplugged. And, you know, the good thing is, for our metal guys, most of them did have the chops.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people think that, like, Bon Jovi was kind of like the catalyst for this. You know, when they did the music awards and they did Wanted Dead or Alive and Living on a Prayer. Well, as I researched it more, they kind of say that, like, the Unplugged was already kind of in place, or they were working on it behind the scenes. But I do think that was a pivotal moment for the whole Unplugged thing. What do you think?
Oh, totally agree. I had done this in our metal TV performances. I had talked about that performance with John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora and how pivotal that was. And I had kind of put it out there to you, like, confirm that this was kind of how this all kicked off, and you say, yeah, I think it was. But yeah, that was huge. Like, that was a great performance. And I thought that it really showcased their talents. And then I'm sure it sparked the bug in MTV's eyes, and they said, okay, this is cool. People were receptive. They liked how it broke down. So yeah, I'm right on board with that one.
Yeah, and another band that gets mentioned a lot is Tesla. I mean, you figure in 1990, Tesla had a number 8 hit with Signs. I've been very upfront. I respect Tesla. I've never got super into them. I wasn't even very super into this song when it was out.
Uh-huh.
But I do think it was important for the whole acoustic thing, for like hair metal and hard rock.
Yeah, that was a big album for them. I even remember that album when I was a young man.
You know, this is a weird time because this is all kind of happening in the early 90s as grunge is coming out. So what we'll kind of integrate with this whole thing that we're doing tonight, we'll get some audio clips of the band kind of talking about how this was kind of like the beginning of the end for them. You know what I mean? As much as it was like maybe there was this new exciting terrain to go on to with the acoustic, there was some this other thing that was kind of looming, was the whole grunge thing. But, you know, if anything, it was kind of like a last-ditch effort to kind of show that they were relevant.
Yeah. You could tell by the audience reaction, you know what I mean? Like, the amount of cheering women in the audience in like 90, 91, it went from that to not so many young people in the audience just a year later. They kind of went in the direction of the Alice in Chains and whatnot.
Yeah, and then the biggest thing that I can think of all of this is that, at least for the musicians, it was a lot simpler, man. A lot less gear.
Oh, totally. They loved it.
All right. Well, like I said, I know there's a crap load of awesome performances, man. So jump right in. Tell me what your number 10 is.
All right. Well, I got one of your favorites, man. I got Ron Taylor doing All's Fair from 2016. And my first two, 9 and 10 are my, like, the new ones. Everything else is mm-hmm. heyday.
Okay.
But this one, and I'll say, this kind of showcases the true talents, and I'll tell you why. It's in a way, they're almost more impressive because these guys are probably in their 50s at this point, mm-hmm. and they're still doing such a great job. And so anyway, this performance is Ron Taylor with an unknown guitar player, and it's just he and his guitar player, and I'm sure they're somewhere on the East Coast, Midwest. He does All's Fair in Love and War, and the coolest part is, and the reason I chose this is because they pre-tracked that scream at the beginning when he says, "I have no idea." Mm-hmm. And it's that just banshee guttural scream yep. he does at the beginning on the album, and it's just awesome. And it plays the track before he was ready for it, like they queued it up just in case he couldn't pull it off. Mm-hmm. And he stopped the audience, and he stopped the track, and he said, no, watch this. And he just belted it out all live, all on his own. Didn't look like it was staged, and he absolutely knocked it out of the park like it was 89. So I loved it for that reason. Now, if you look it up, you'll find a ton of these performances from this 2016 performance, but you can't find this anymore. And I'm wondering if they removed it because they had this error, and it may have been slightly embarrassing for him, but mm-hmm. to me, it shouldn't be embarrassing at all. To me, he should be really proud of the fact that he said, "Nope, stop it. I'm going to show you how killer I am still, bald head and all. I'm going to rip this scream out just like it should be." And the other cool thing about this performance is he keeps referring to, instead of saying like, "All right, here's one from Lillian," he'll be like, "Okay, here's an old stiff song."
Oh,
because a lot of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, a lot of them were so,
a lot of those, yeah, a lot of those Lillian first self-titled songs were from his band Stiff. So it's kind of funny where he kind of, in a way, I think he's kind of jabbing Lillian a little bit, and he wants to throw a bone to Stiff. Anyway, that's my number 10.
Nice. You know, and the thing with Ron is this is kind of his element now. You know, he does play in an electric band called Lowside, but man, he's kind of out there beating the path of doing the Weekend Warrior thing, and he goes out there with Darren DeLatte, who was in Lillian Axe. He does a lot of acoustic stuff, so that's his element, you know. But like I said, I'm glad you threw in the bald head, because that'll be one of those ones where, you know, if you haven't seen Ron in a while, if the last time you saw Ron was 92, you know, you're gonna be up for a surprise. He looks a little different,
right?
But he's, like I said, still got the chops, still got a great voice. He was on the podcast a few months back, it was a great time, and everybody knows I'm a big Ron Taylor fan, so
yeah.
All right, well, number 10, I'm going with Warrant doing Blind Faith.
When we released the record Cherry Pie in the office of Columbia in New York, there was a huge poster of Cherry Pie, you know, and that was a big ego boost. And then when we were going to release the next record, I did the exact same trip to New York to talk with Donnie. And over his secretary's desk was a huge poster again, only this time it was Alice in Chains Dirt. And I was like, I think we slipped down the priority ladder here a little bit. If you weren't wearing flannel or had a goatee, I mean, you were not cool. I mean, you should be shot on sight. It hurt.
Now, 1991, mm-hmm. Arsenio Hall. You know me and Arsenio, man. I'm a sucker for these Arsenio performances. They did this on some other shows, too. They were on Rick D's. I think they were on MTV. They were making the rounds with this. The crazy thing was is that this was kind of the end of the Cherry Pie album run. This single didn't do anything. You know what I mean? It just, like you said, it was kind of like, I think it was 88 on the charts. It was really low. And, yeah. You know, Cherry Pie, you know, sold millions, and they had the big hits. The first two songs were the biggest hits on the album. But, and it, honestly, I'm going to be completely honest. I don't remember this song ever coming out. I don't ever remember seeing the video back in the day. I don't even remember the song. I'm going to be 100% honest. I don't even remember this song from the album until like recent times. I'm dead serious. I've never been a Cherry Pie guy. I'm not like Janie was the Cherry Pie guy. I've never been to Cherry Pie. I just haven't. But, like, you know, obviously we do a lot of research when we do TV performance episodes or I'm just scouring the internet and I post a lot of stuff on Twitter. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that. So, you know, I've gotten to watch this a few different times more in recent years, and I really like it. There's a couple things that I really want to say about the band is, of course, Janie Lane's a great singer. Steven Sweet is a great singer. He does the backgrounds with Janie, and he sounds great.
Yeah,
and
great.
You know, you kind of alluded to this in the beginning, and I think this is going to come up where some people figure it out and some people don't. But Joey Allen plays a mean solo on the acoustic, and not everybody can do that, as we're probably going to get into. You know, it's not easy. You cannot do exactly, you know, those shredding solos on an acoustic. But I think the guys do great. This song's really grown on me. I don't know why it missed my radar back in the day, but I enjoy me some Blind Faith now.
I agree. I don't know why it missed my radar when I was heavily into getting into this album. And I don't know. Like I said, the same. I'm not just buttering you up. I miss this song. And I don't know why. Maybe the other songs were so great that I kind of ignored it. But... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really pushed this thing as a single, and it never really took off.
No,
I'm not sure if they play it anymore. I don't know. It's just it never really caught on for me, and probably why I didn't really catch on as a single.
yeah, exactly. It was just weird. I don't. And you know, also it was '91. Were people getting played out with this stuff? I don't know, but it didn't fly. But today I go back and I really like it. So
yeah, very good.
All right, number 9.
Okay, the other newer one, and I got Hardline doing Hot Cherie at a VIP party, and I think it's from 2019 is what I could surmise from this. But
I met up with these guys, and you know, they played me some of their tapes of the band that they were in, Burnett, and we started picking apart songs and actually writing some new songs, and I got real interested in producing them. As just the two brothers, they were going to do like a duet thing, like sort of like a Heart of Rock Nelsons. And I was going to produce them. So we were working on a material at the same time that Bad English was doing our last record. And it just, you know, I was less enthused with the Bad English thing the more and more I was going in the studio with that, and more enthused with what we were doing together. So.
I know I sound like a broken record in terms of my preaching of Hardline, but...
Wait, you like Hardline?
yeah, crazy. I got one album and I sit here and preach all that. Well, you know what I mean, one album. but this just drives my previous point home in terms of... This is 30 years after Double Eclipse came out, and Gioli might sound better on this performance than he did on the Van Halen tour in 92. I mean, he just kills it. So... I kept this in at the risk of sounding predictable, which is like my biggest fear. but I'm stoked to do this because I'm really proud of this band and the way they sound. In the background is that Dean Castronova, the guy that was on Double Eclipse. He turned into the Journey drummer and backup vocalist, and he's got a hell of a voice. Sounds exactly like Steve Perry. Yeah, it's just kind of a small little venue, and it's Hardline just making this sound like it did when it was brand new, and it's very impressive. So If you do search it, I would just type in Hardline Hot Cherry VIP, and it'll come up with their current band.
The funny thing, you know, with you mentioning this, actually with your first two, so if you go back and you think about, like, acoustic performances from, like, 91 and 90, there's probably only going to be either the Unplugged or the Arsenio, you know what I'm trying, so, but, like, today, like, if you're looking at somebody today, there's acoustic performances up the ass, you know, they're playing at, bars and VIPs, and you know, so it's just amazing how it's changed, where it was just kind of like a selective thing back in the day, and now it's just, like, the total norm. Another thing about Hardline, I've watched this performance, okay, so here's my couple remarks. They do sound cool.
Okay.
If you haven't seen Johnny in a long time, like, if you haven't really seen him, same thing with Ron, you know, he was like this long-haired, skinny rocker, and now he looks like he's your softball coach. You know, he's changed. I mean, I've changed. I understand, but it was kind of shocking to see him. I was like, wow, that dude looks different. And the funniest thing, too, is that there's some dude, he looks like he's playing a cardboard box.
Yeah, you're right. I think that might be Dean Castroneta. I can't remember, but it may be him. But, hey, you can make anything sound good if you're a drummer.
He's the best box player I've ever heard. He's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Might as well be playing the spoons. But you know what? There is a 92 video. They're doing this song, I'll Be There, off Double Eclipse, and it's with the original band, and Neil Sean's in there and everything. And I specifically didn't choose it because this impressed me so much that 30 years later, they're still making this song sound so good. So that's why I chose that song.
Awesome. Okay, my number nine. It's a staple on the podcast, TNT. And they're doing Lionheart in Japan. I don't know. It's just on some random Japanese television show, 1992.
And now there's nothing lost. Yeah, there's nothing gained. Morning comes and it's still the same. And why do we have to fall from grace? Holding on to yesterday.
I think the genre ate itself, and I don't think that's even the band's fault. I think it's the industry, and they do it every time. Every time they did it with grunge, for God's sake.
Oh, definitely.
So every time something takes off, they want, let's get more of that, and let's do more of that, sign more of that.
I'm a big Realized Fantasies guy. I know you are too.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say is that I've never been super into this song per se. I thought it was okay. Maybe kind of like the Blind Faith thing. It was just kind of there. Probably for me, like, End of the Line is so awesome on Intuition. And I've always said just on our last podcast how much I like Northern Lights. So this ballad just always kind of is this kind of there for me. But when I watch it acoustically, man, it just the things that pop out. It is a good song. But man, Tony Harnell's voice, it's like, it's in its purest form. I mean, there's no, like, we kind of alluded to this before. It's like, there's nowhere to hide. Like, it's just you mm-hmm. and an acoustic. There's no effects. There's no distortion drowning out your voice. This is you. And he sounds so good. And he gets into, like, the falsetto stuff. And I got to give Ronnie some credit, man, because he actually does a little vocal stylings of his own. And of course, he's got a little bit of an accent going on, but he sounds cool. And I don't know about you, man, but, like, okay, so, like, with the Hardline, and there's some other ones on mine, and Warrant was kind of like that, too. It's like a full band thing, right? But sometimes I think there's just something about when it's the two guys, I just think the emotional thing is there. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the song is stripped down to its barest bone, you know, version that it could be, and then you just got two guys busting it out. So I like the emotion that's shown on this tune, and I think you'll go to certain songs as we progress that sometimes that just a voice and a guitar does the trick.
Totally, dude. Man, I mean, if you could choose a band that will kill it unplugged, whether you've seen it or not, like, I'll put my money on this band.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
So.
Talents. Okay. Number eight.
Okay. Number eight. Got Blue Murder doing Jelly Roll from 1989 on the Weird Al MTV show.
I was born to love you, take me any way you choose, yeah. Oh.
So this band deserves way more credit. This is a really silly song title, and I don't know what the title really means, and maybe I'm completely missing some sexual innuendo or something here, but it's very, very odd song title. But anyway, killer performance, great three-piece band, awesome album, and I'm really always stoked to see Sykes keep going after the Whitesnake axe that he received. So they look good, they sound good, they pull it off really well. They transition from the you know, very acoustic intro to the song to that big chorus. So yeah, really cool album. I've always really liked it. There's not a song on there that I skip.
You know, I might have to edit this out because I might be totally off base here, but I remember when I was a kid, okay, I thought it had something to do with the structuring of the song. Like the song had like a jelly roll has something inside of it, and I felt like this song is almost like it's got like another layer. You know what I'm trying to say? Like it's kind of that one thing, but then it turns into another thing. I don't know if that has anything to do. Like it's is what it, what I'm, I don't know. Maybe I'm totally, like I said, I'm sleep deprived.
No, dude. It, you know what? Hey, I buy it right now. You said it with confidence. I'm all in. That would make total that would make total sense because this song does start off very, very different than the chorus. Like, if there's any song where you go, did you think that this chorus was coming after this intro and this verse? You'd be like, no, not at all. Right. But they made it work so well. So from start to finish, this song is 180 degrees different. So, like, dude, if that's what they're going for, and that's the metaphor they're going for, they nailed it.
Yeah, like that part where, like, that love will break your heart. It's totally different than the first part of the song. So
oh, yeah.
I don't know how what that makes it be a jelly roll. I'm not really sure. But I've watched different performances of this. I remember this was on, I think they were even on Yahoo Sirius, and they were on Weird Al. They were all over the place back then. And I think the biggest takeaway is that, like, how, like, John Sykes is like a freak of nature, right? Like, he can play guitar so well, he can sing so well, and just to think that three dudes, like, can make that kind of magic, like, that's, it's kind of like a Rush type, you know, I mean, there's a lot of three-piece bands that do it, but, man, just a lot of talent in that band, and John Sykes would be the peak of it all that talent, between the vocals, the guitar playing, the songwriting, so, yeah, good for him.
Well, okay, real quick, three things. John Sykes wasn't confident that he should be the singer, so they auditioned a million singers.
Almost had Ray Gillen.
That's right, yeah. And he had done all the demos, and they finally said, dude, you're killing it. Just sing. And they said, all right. Next thing, I did see a ghost fourth keyboard player in some live performances, which is understandable.
Okay, you know what I mean? Yep.
I get that. And then the third thing is, if your theory is right, they should have called the song Inside Out. That would have been way more killer than Jelly Roll.
right. And I'm probably way off base, but I just remember being a kid, like, I thought it had something to do with the structure, the way the song was structured versus anything that's said in the song, because it didn't make any sense, but I don't know.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Number eight, this is probably my most modern one, okay? And I'm going to go with the Scorpions, and I'm just going to go with a blanket thing here. I'm going to go with the Acoustica album.
Okay.
This is one, you know, I've known about this for years, but I think with this project, you know, this podcast, I went and I dug deep into this one. And man, it's like the Scorps, it's like 2001. They took over some castle, right, in some foreign land. I don't know where they are. It's like they're in a small country. I know that. But man, it's a big production, right? They got all kinds of band members on the stage. There's dancers. There's lighting. I mean, it's a really huge production. But what I like about this kind of stuff, and kind of what we're going to see, like, the contrast, you know, like if you think of like what Blue Murder or what TNT did, it's just pretty much just straightforward. They're just kind of doing it acoustically. But when you get some of these albums like this and maybe some other ones that we're going to progress to here, these songs take on new life. You know what I mean? Like, if you listen to like Rock You Like a Hurricane from this or like Holiday, I mean, they take it into a different direction that it's never gone. And I got a lot of respect for that because it also goes back to like, what are they going to do? You know, it's 2001. A new Scorpions album is not going to do shit. You know what I mean? So maybe we could go and kind of give new life to the old songs. And they nail it, and it's the talent. I mean, between the guitars, you know, Rudolph and Matthias, and the vocals of Klaus, and then they got all kinds of background vocalists that kind of support the whole thing. But you know who the MVP is? And this is a guy that gets shit on, man, a lot because of his mouth. James Kodak, man.
Yep.
He's so tasteful in this. Like, he's just, you got to watch Holiday and watch the end, because it almost gets into like a Spanish type of a style at the end of the song Holiday. And he's just so restrained, but it's so tasteful. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's doing all like this off-time stuff. And I was just blown away. I was like, man, this guy does not get enough credit. So, but yeah, just check out like Holiday, Rock You Like a Hurricane, Under the Same Sun. And there are tons of their hits are out there. They even do like a Cars cover. They cover the Cars. Who's Gonna Drive You Home Tonight? Drive is what it's called. Drive. So,
There's
a lot of cool shit on there. So, it's a really cool album and great video, and it sounds awesome. You familiar with this one?
I have it, and I am. I forgot all about the Cars thing. I think I probably focused on some other stuff, but yeah. I'd like to go back to that now.
Yeah, it's. I think it's well done, and I like that creativity when somebody can take one of their original creations and kind of turn it into something new for like a different era. It's well done.
Yeah, totally. And I always thought that the album cover was kind of cool. It's like a modern Blackout.
Yeah. With, yep.
You know, the cord, the amp cord around the guy's face who's screaming.
Yep, for sure. All right,
yeah,
man.
That's a good one.
Number seven.
Okay, number seven. Got my boys in Danger Danger doing Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Oh, my good friends, turn the face to the wall when they see me. What the hell's going on? Am I so blind that I can't see when I'm being hit? I know it's silly, but girl, I really thought we had a chance.
We just, you know, I'd rather sell two records and have a record that sounds like what I like, and I'm very happy with it. And, you know, regardless, I think bands like Bryan Adams and Def Leppard and Journey will always sell records regardless of the trends. These are what I like, and like I say, I'd rather just make a record that I'm happy with and, you know, a few select people, you know, are happy with. And if it sells millions, that's great.
From Japan in 91, and it sounds killer. Like, of all songs, maybe not to sound killer unplugged. It's just Ted and Andy Timmons doing it together, just next to one another. And dude, it's killer. And Andy's got these great backup vocals. And this was the time for this band. And they were a big Japan band. And it was a really cool show. But it's about as rockin' performance as you can get out of an acoustic song. But how could you not with such a positive, happy, catchy song like Bang Bang?
Oh, yeah.
So I was really impressed with Ted's vocals. He knocked it out of the park. He didn't vary whatsoever if he was singing it full voice with the electric band behind him, but it's great. So I really, there's a few to choose from, but I've always liked this song. So, and it actually did really well unplugged.
It did. I've watched this clip for years. I've always been impressed with it. I think those are kind of like the two guys that make the Danger Danger sound. You know what I mean? And so get them together to do it. And you're right. Andy's got some great backups. I think the only thing that I go back to is it's something that Michael Kelly Smith said. You know, he said that like hair metal killed hair metal. And I sometimes wonder like if Bang Bang is one of those songs that would like the beginning of the death of hair metal, because it's so bubblegum. It's just so pop, you know? But I love it so much. I'm not even a Danger Danger guy, but that, like, I love that song. That's like one of my favorite. Like, there's always these genre songs, you know, like from the hair metal genre, and Bang Bang is one of them. No Easy Way Out by Rocks Gang is another one. Like, there's these certain songs that, like, I could listen to them over and over again. There's something about them that's cool. And this, like I said, this may have been the first step into taking all credibility away from hard-ass rockers. But well, I don't even care, man. I love it.
Yeah, you can't not.
All right, number 7, Poison, the way Arsenio says it. But Unplugged, yeah. MTV Unplugged.
MTV killed heavy metal music. You suddenly had the hair band was coming out. It was only about what they looked like and how many parties they could have and how many 14-year-old girls they could pull after the show. I mean, the music was rubbish, and they destroyed what the rest of us created because everyone got lumped in together with it. That should be an emblem somewhere, you know. Poison killed everything. Honestly, those kind of bands did do that, I think. These things that come out and, you know, and wear makeup and, you know, what's that all about? That's not metal. Sorry, it's just not.
So I did it for her, don't be late. Cause I'm boom, boom, baby, I just can't wait. Oh, oh, oh. Talking dirty right in my ear, making us sound so perfectly clear. So I would learn.
A lot of great bands and great music came out of that era. I mean, we were truly living out our fantasy, and we brought that onto the stage, onto the scene, into the shows. We were young, we were partying, and it was awesome.
This was 1990. It's fun, right? It proved they could play, because I think some people kind of thought they were like just an image band, and you know, they didn't have any chops. But it also, I think, it shows that they are not like a top-notch band. I'm going to say, like, I don't think, you know, when you put this up against some of these other ones, anyone that we've mentioned or anything that's coming next, you put it up against it, and it's not going to cut it. Personally, that's the way I look at it. Yeah. One big thing that they lack in, the only time I ever hear them do harmonies is in the beginning of Let It Play. And then
right.
All the rest of the songs, they just sing exactly what Brett sings. So I don't know if they really are great with harmonies. I think most of their harmonies were always piped in. At a live concert. So I think vocally there's some struggles there. And hey, man, I love CC DeVille as much as the next guy, but that dude cannot play lead on an acoustic. He just can't. He did not like configure it, you know, like there just wasn't enough thought put into this performance, but it's fun. I love how they do Good Love. I'm not a big fan of Good Love, but I think on here I really like it because Brett does the harmonica and it does fit. I think all the songs they do actually work really well, like in a kind of groovy Unplugged thing. You know, obviously, well, Every Rose is slow, but Unskinny Bop sounds cool. Your Mama Don't Dance, Let It Play. All those songs I think work really well. But it's classic. I loved it back in the day. Thought it was cool when they put it on the Crack a Smile album. But they proved a lot that they were good, but then they also proved a little bit that they weren't that good. So that's what I got. I like it, but I see that it's flawed.
Well, okay, so I got a little bit to say here because I actually put this on my honorable mentions, but okay, so I wanted to put Poison. So they have Good Love, Your Mama Don't Dance, Let It Play. So none of those songs, well, Mama Don't Dance was a single. But I don't know why. You and I have kind of talked about that
right.
Before.
I mean, it worked, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I basically thought they were awful choices. Like, they chose these songs because they thought that they would translate well in acoustic versions right. of those songs. But they were not Poison hits. The only song that I thought they really kicked ass on was Unskinny Bop.
Yeah.
And it actually translated really well.
It does.
To an acoustic performance. And that one was like almost on my list because I love Poison so much and I did like their performance. But the rest of it, I thought, what are you thinking? Like, dudes, the goal of this is to play your big songs and maybe one random album track in there that fits the mold of acoustic, but not gear your song choices towards the songs that are already kind of that
right.
being like
right.
an acoustic version. So yeah, I wasn't too stoked on those three, Good Love, Mama Don't Dance, and Let It Play. That's it for that. And I didn't think that they were bad performances by any means.
No.
I just thought the song choices were bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, I mean, valid points, man. I'm with you.
Got it. You can tell I kind of dissected this one, huh?
You did your homework.
That's right.
Number 6.
All right. here's where I got Dokken doing one live night. For 1995, doing Just Got Lucky with Jeff Pilson on lead vocals. He's got an amazing voice, as does Mick, and I almost chose Tooth and Nail because Mick nails it on this one.
Super good.
But I did Jeff. Jeff is he's the Juan / Michael Anthony of this band. You know, he's got those solid backup vocals and a hell of a bass player, great musician. This is just a killer song that starts off with the lead and the solo, and it absolutely rips from 84, and he absolutely lets it rip here. And I like the fact that they kind of shared the wealth, and Don sat in the background on a couple songs and let the others take the helm. I thought it was a really cool album. I've always really enjoyed this live video, this entire thing, as well as the album. It's really cool. So they had some good tracks and some good choices, and this one was one of my favorites for sure.
This may show up on my list, so I won't say too much, but I'm going to say one thing about it right now that I just want to throw out there. And I think you probably can relate to this. Probably a lot of metalheads can, is that, you know, sometimes like you wake up in the morning and you're having your coffee and you kind of want to listen to something that you like cool, like Dokken, but you definitely don't want to hear something that's like super heavy. And like this album just like works so well for like that kind of a atmosphere. You know what I mean? If you just like want to chill and start your day, you know, relaxing with a cup of coffee, you throw this thing on, man, you can go through the whole album. It's just got a really cool vibe. So I feel like that's what's nice about these kind of performances, because, you know, remember, what do they say in the power ballads? Every rocker's got a soft side or whatever, you know? I mean, like, I like
that's right. Acoustic music, I remember that.
But I like laid back music. I like heavy music too, but sometimes you just want to put that album on and it's like nothing too crazy yet. Day's just starting. And something like this is great because it still has the hooks and those great songs that you remember. I feel like I'm in an infomercial now. Call now, and we'll send you not only One Night Live, but we'll send you Dysfunctional. But it's got a really chilled out vibe, and it's good for an early morning rocking out. So yeah,
that's right.
All right, number six. I got Motley Crue. This is just kind of like a blanket one, like 1994 when they played on the 94 album tour.
You know I'm a dreamer, but my heart's in gold. I had to run away high, so I wouldn't come home. Just when things went right, doesn't mean they're always wrong. Stay this song.
You know, it was a weird time. You know, it was an odd time. It was changing. Yeah, I mean, all the Motley, you know, Motley's whole career was about excess, over the top. You know, and then all of a sudden, all these bands started coming out of Seattle that were the antithesis of that. You know, and it was rough, man. And it was weird. Like the concert tickets were weird, but it wasn't just weird for Motley. It was weird for everybody.
They did a little acoustical bit. So this just shows you, like, acoustic is, like, ingrained, right, in all the hair metal bands. Like, we got to do an acoustic thing. So I was at a show in Weedsport, New York. I saw this tour. And at a certain point in the show, they kind of, like, they unplug. They break everything down. They bring Tommy Lee's drums, or they bring in another set kind of down on the stage. They invite the audience members, a few of them, to come up and just kind of, you know, dance around with them and stuff. It was a really cool vibe. They do Home Sweet Home, which I think Karabi does great with. It's just different. I mean, I know you're a Vince guy. I'm a Vince guy. But I like how he did it. He kind of put in some changes to kind of fit his voice and kind of fit that, you know, vibe that they were going for with the acoustical thing. They do Revolution by the Beatles. They do Love Shine off of the 94 album. And they do Don't Go Away Mad. So, I don't know. Like I said, Karabi fits into this, you know. Like, you've heard Vince do acoustic before. I think they did it in when they did their Vegas residency. Vince just isn't cut out for this. Let's just face it. Vince, you know, doesn't have the greatest live voice. He needs all that shit behind him, like the distortion and everything, where Karabi, he's got a different kind of a voice. You know, it's more organic, and it works in this kind of a atmosphere. So I just remember thinking it was a cool move, something different when I saw it in person. And then when I go back and watch it, I think it's pretty cool. So
nice. I think that'd work well. I haven't seen it. You know, I I think I saw him doing Home Sweet Home, but I'll check this out, this whole kind of segment. Because it sounds pretty interesting, and I'm slowly but surely kind of picking up the momentum to get into this album.
Nice. You just got to take it for what it is. You know what I mean? I think that's the main thing. You know, like, everybody always, you know, the big comment is always, oh, I wish they called this something else. Well, I mean, that's probably a kind of a stretch. But if you just take it for, hey, man, there was a split. They brought in somebody new. They tried something different. It's a nice little different kind of a nugget in the catalog. I've always said that. So, I mean, whether you love them or you hate them, you got the 94, which is a different kind of a vibe. You got Generation Swine, which is a different kind of vibe. You've got even New Tattoo, which is different. So, you know, for Motley just to make the same album over and over again, that kind of could be boring. You know what I mean? So some of these albums people aren't going to like, but they're always there. Maybe you just got to be in the mood for them at a certain point. So it is what it is. It's Kiss is the same way. You know what I mean? I'm a huge Kiss fan. Everybody knows that. And Kiss just tried so many different things, you know, based on being out in the late 70s to the early 80s to the later 80s to the early, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, this is how the majority of artists survive. So by doing different things. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you try being the financial advisor telling Motley Crue not to call it Motley Crue. Like, good luck there.
Good luck. All right, man. Number five.
All right. Here's where I got Def Leppard doing the song called Tonight. And it's a Japanese TV program from the Adrenalize promos.
It wasn't cool to be Def Leppard.
Grunge was king.
Everything that was coming out of Seattle was really, it was really vital sounding.
I chose this because Joe is just peaking in my opinion on this song and this album. Very Love Bites-esque chorus where he gets into the full voice and really lets it rip. I don't love this song like I love their other ballads, but it just showcases their talents. And the best part is Joe finally kind of like went without the mullet, and he's finally got like a really cool like full head of 80s hair. So even though it's 93, but no, it's a really cool performance. The other guys are kind of already looking like a little bit more toned down, if you will, like they're kind of giving in. Starting with the facial hair and the striped shirts and the boots and this and that, and Joe's kind of still rocking the look, which I respect. But no, really cool performance, and they were probably still peaking pretty good in Japan at that point. So yeah, I really like this one.
Is Tonight on Adrenalize?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you know, I got to be schooled in the Def Leppard lore. But one thing, you know, when I was going through the different performances, I found this one, and I'd seen it before. I think it's like in the 90s. It's like mid 90s, like 95 or something like that. And Joe Elliott looks exactly like Kurt Cobain, right? And all of them look really grungy. I think Rick Savage looks like a librarian. He's got these weird glasses on and stuff.
And it's like, I know, dude.
Oh, man, the mighty have fallen. You know what I mean? But
I know. Yeah. You know, I think we did that worst looks episode a while back. And which is hilarious. And, just that fits exactly, but I failed to add, I think it was the Adrenalize album, and they were doing like an MTV performance, and Joe was so confused, dude. He had like short shorts with Doc Martens and like the Beatles glasses and like the long trench coat, and I'm like, oh my God, dude, like pick an era. Are we going 70s? Are we going 80s? Are we going off the 90s? Like, what are we doing here? So I totally get it.
All right. So my number five, I got Lillian X. Gotta have Lillian X. And what? I believe this is 92 promoting the Poetic Justice album. They're like on cable TV, I believe.
Makes me wonder, like on the like Love and War, had we stayed with the darker side, right, and not gone into She Liked It on Top and Down on Us and that, and just kind of kept it with that a little more focused, you know, on that darker sound, would that have been enough? And I'm really looking back now, I don't think it would have, with Nirvana and all those guys coming through. I think we'd have been wiped out by the whole tsunami anyway.
So they were probably like in their hometown at 2 a.m. We're on some public access shit, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really good. They do True Believer and they do No Matter What. And actually, if you look around, I mean, Lillian X is, like you said, if you look at like Ron, he does a lot of acoustic stuff. And Steve and Ron were really making the rounds, doing in-stores and doing all kinds of shit through the years. So you could find a lot of cool stuff with the two of them. But, I mean, I'm not going to get too crazy with this, but I just think it shows the great chemistry between these two guys. Steve Blaze is a great singer as well with his harmonies and his guitar playing. Ron, always been a fan of his voice, and it just sounds great. So, I mean, like I said, these are the two guys that can pull it off. You're just singing and playing, and it sounds good.
Now, is that in-store performance that you had sent me, and it's like a long video on YouTube, or is this a different one?
This is something different. Yeah, there's no odd, like, they're not in a store. This is like they're on cable TV, like in some.
Okay.
It's all blacks, you know, it's all black background in a studio or whatever. But yeah, it's really cool. So you check that one out.
Yeah, they knocked those songs out of the park in that phase of their career. So yeah, I'll check this out.
Okay, man. Number four.
All right. Here's what I got. Europe doing I'll Cry For You from the Prisoners in Paradise era. It's haunting me. I'm still trying to come to my senses, but I can't look back, so I'm taking my chances. I want to give you my heart and give you my soul. I want to lay in your arms, never let go. Like a fire needs a spark, like a fool in the dark. Honey, I'll cry for you.
We had the most challenging year to release a new album in that musical style, because everything changed during 91, really. Now in 1990, it would still have been the perfect market for bands like Europe, but it never happened. It's far too easy to blame like a movement or, you know, style of music around the corner. I mean, for us, that was not the case, though, because we sold, I can't remember, 1.5 million units of that album.
Okay.
So the label wanted us to do another one. They wanted Prisoners in Paradise 2, you know? But we didn't want to do it because we felt we couldn't add anything to the current climate. It was all full of grunge bands.
So there was lots of Europe Unplugged to choose from, and I chose this song because I feel like it doesn't really get enough love. The ballads on this album kind of like, I think they kind of shit on the previous two albums. I think they're solid on Prisoners. It's a really, really awesome era for Europe visually. They kind of toned down the fluff and went like full early 90s embrace, and in a good way, like a 1990, 1991 way.
Yeah,
and
not a 95 you know, way.
No, not at all. I'm not here to talk about looks, but man, they really honed it in on this one, and they sound so good. And if you listen to this song and then you listen to a couple others from this performance, Joey is also meant for unplugged stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He does miss a beat. He's he tones it down a bit for the other songs, but this one is pretty much the same as you're going to find on the album. And it's one of those ballads that you go, you know, if you were to ask someone, all right, put Carrie and this song and Prisoners next to each other, which one was the number one? They'd probably choose this song without knowing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think this song needs a little bit more love. And this album is definitely my favorite Europe album. So I went with one from that.
You know, I don't know why Europe is like not making my list lately. It's concerning. I'm concerned. but I love this song and I love this performance. I've seen it before. Key plays a little mandolin and
that's
everything.
Right.
I mean, it sounds so good. And Joey, like you said, sounds awesome. And I don't know how this one missed my radar, but this song works really well in that performance. You know what I mean? Sometimes, like we said, certain ones, you know, like some of the Poison ones and stuff, may be questionable to do them acoustic. But this sounded really good. It really worked, and it's kind of in. You know, like I said, that was the thing. I mean, you know, if you're going to do acoustic or you got to do grunge, but I think it was working, so I love it.
Nice.
All right, number four. Here's where I put Winger. I got 1993 though. I know everybody thinks I'm going to say Unplugged, right? But no, I like that.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of Pull, man. And they're on, I think it's once again, Japanese TV. They do Down Incognito.
When grunge became cool, it wasn't cool to be in any of the 80s bands.
But I'll wait it out, call it superstition. I'll be fine for now, just reminiscing, cause I'm all out of charm. And I'm all out of money. I'm hanging down incognito, waiting for the sun to shine. Not too sad to let it go. I took all the pennies I had to
And I love that song. That song should have been a hit, could have been a hit if it was out maybe a couple years earlier. I think they also do Who's the One, which is a cool song. You know, it's growing on me, but it's not one of my favorites. But man, Down Incognito sounds so good. And it's kind of like what we've been saying between Ronnie and Tony and Ron and Steve and Kip and Reb is probably the best out of all the ones you just mentioned. I'm sorry. I mean, these guys are super talented. I mean, both good singers, both great players. Reb, obviously, like I said, he noodles around pretty good on acoustic. It doesn't sound like it doesn't fit or whatever. And, you know, they got the look, you know, obviously, you know, the bangs are getting longer and they got beards and all this shit, you know. You can tell the times have changed. But the craziest thing, I don't know if you'll be with me on this. I don't know if anybody will be with me on this. But for some reason, man, I looked at Reb Beach in one shot with the beard and he just reminded me of Marv from Home Alone. I don't know why, man. I caught one look at him and was like, man, he kind of reminds me of like one of the Sticky Bandits, you know. But
nice.
But other than that, I love that performance. I had been watching that one for years. I posted on Twitter in the past, and it's a great performance.
It is, and it's funny how Kip says about the title. Pull.
Oh yeah.
You know how he refers to it being like shotgun, like pull.
So yeah, shoot, throw it up in the air, you know? Pull and shoot. Yep. That was so funny when I saw that on there. Oh my god, that was great.
I guess he can make fun of himself.
Yeah, he knew. Number three.
All right. Well, I got Winger right now doing Can't Get Enough from the 91 Unplugged MTVs.
I need your love. I need your skin. I need you, baby.
So I finally got an alternate version of a song that absolutely rules, unlike what Rat and Poison did for their Unplugged stuff. And I'm sorry if you have Rat coming up.
But, I don't.
but this is just like pure talent, like you're saying about this. I almost put Kip doing a solo show from just like a couple years ago, circa like the Hardline and Ron Taylor phase. He does like 2 hours of Kip classics with that turquoise guitar. And he's amazing. So I almost put a more current Kip in place of this, but you can't escape how good of a performance they did on Can't Get Enough. And they altered it. They altered it a little bit.
Yes, they do.
It worked really well, but it was just the perfect time for this band. And they were kind of peaking and kind of downhill from there. But but this performance, I'll always love. Whole thing.
I almost put the Unplug. I love how they do Can't Get Enough. I also think they do a great job with Headed for a Heartbreak. Because like I said, they were the ones where they got a little creative and they tried to make it a little different or make it fit into that acoustical atmosphere. But here's one thing I wanted to mention. I didn't put this on my list, but there is a 1993 performance of Kip and Reb at Much Music. Okay, they do Can't Get Enough and they do Who's the One. So it's during the Pole thing, the Pole era. So here's the thing that's funny about this performance. You got to watch this thing. So if you've watched some of the Much Music things when the bands are in the studio and there's those windows. If you go back to like some of the ones from the earlier 90s, even maybe like 90 or 91 and then the late 80s, there's like fans like just pounding on the windows and just going crazy. Listen to this, right? I swear there's one crazy guy. There's just one guy watching them play, which is just a sign of the times, right? Then, you know, like they're in a studio, so like there's a producer guy and he's off to the side, okay? And he's just like sitting in a chair, like he's not even looking at the band. And I just want to punch that guy in the face and say, turn around, respect these guys. They kick ass, and I want to go run around the streets of Canada and round up people to get them to watch these guys because they're so good. But go back and just those are two little oddball things that I noticed about that performance. So if anyone's ever seen that, you might be able to relate. If you haven't, check it out. See what you think. If I'm nuts or I am nuts, but this performance does exist.
No, I'll have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
But yeah, it is interesting. Okay, here's a big one. Number three is Queensryche, 1992 Unplugged. Relax, child, you would tell. But only did you realize you were scared. There's a place where you will help to face your fears. And it's hard to dissect a certain song that's just better than another. It's all really good. And I'm not even 100% clear on which ones actually aired on MTV and which ones didn't. Because I think when you go on YouTube, you can catch some ones that weren't part of the original airing. But anyways, I Will Remember, I think, is the standout one if I had to pick. Because I've always thought that song was cool. It's hard because it kind of ends the Rage for Order album. And that album is more of like a... It's like an electro metal, I don't know, goth. It's a weird album, you know? And that song is just so peaceful. It just doesn't even fit on the album. And then I think when they do it now, like with updated version, with Queensryche, you know, top of their game, it comes across a little bit different, and it's really cool. Obviously, Silent Lucidity, we're coming off that being a huge hit. My only comment about Silent Lucidity is it feels like the backups are piped in. I don't know. And that's a no-no on Unplugged, but there's no way that these guys can do the backups that good. It just sounds fake. I don't know. Could be wrong. Check it out. Let me know if you guys think the same thing. They do The Lady Wore Black. They do the Scarborough Fair, which is a cover of Simon and Garfunkel. Another thing that's weird, I don't think this aired, but they play Is There Anybody Listening? And if you watch that one, it's like Eddie Jackson... He just stops playing bass at certain moments, or he's playing the wrong bass lines. I don't know what's going on there. It's really bizarre. Bottom line is, I think no one will dispute this, is that Chris DeGarmo and Jeff Tate are Queensryche. They're just like ridiculously talented songwriters, you know, singers, players. Those guys are just talent, and the whole band is just super talented. And to see them in that stripped down form, and to see them at the top of their game. And let's face it, man, Jeff Tate doesn't always look cool, especially if you see him now. But he was looking cool here.
Oh, yeah. This gave me physical pain, physical heart pain, not adding this to my list.
I know. What the hell's wrong with you?
Dude, I know. This was like my... It would have been... Silent Lucidity is performed so well. And I I was just kicking it around, and I don't know, dude. It's so good. I don't know why I didn't put it on there. If they're the perfect unplugged band, and that song was performed so well. And I kind of agree, though. Those backgrounds are so, they're too good.
They're too good. I don't even care. Nope, there's no way they did them. I don't know how they pulled it off. Because, you know, unplugged, like, it was like they were watching you to see if you're pulling any scams, you know, because you got to show your credibility here. But I think those are piped in. I don't care.
They must be.
All right, man. Number two.
Okay, here's where I got Richie Sambora doing Wanted Dead or Alive on Arsenio Hall in 91. Okay, so we got Richie solo. Okay, it's all of Bon Jovi minus John is what I surmised by looking at the guys in the background. And people out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like the rest of the band is there without him. But it's kind of that, like who knows, in-between time for Bon Jovi, which he explained to Arsenio during the interview portion of this. But they got a little sick of one another after almost a decade together, so they took a little break. But in terms of the performance, he does One Light Burning off of his solo album, which is pretty good, and Wanted. And Wanted is just perfect. He does it amazing. He's got that huge, strong voice. And it honestly probably would have been my number one if it weren't for my first epic choice coming up, but I just can't preach Richie's vocals enough, and he did a great job to the point where you go, well, who needs John? Got the rest of the band there, he got Richie, and Cher makes an appearance.
Yes. Did she bring him out his hat or something? Did she bring him out a hat?
Yeah. So that's kind of classic too. But anyway, really good performance, and Richie just kills it. So yeah, had to put him way up there.
Yeah, you know, I went back. I've seen this before, but I've watched it again recently. And, you know, Richie's a better singer than John, right? I'll say it. I mean, John has the voice that sells the band and the looks and everything.
Yeah.
But, man, what a singer he is. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is really great. I mean, kind of like the John Sykes thing, right? Like, I mean, this dude can play. He can sing. You know, what a talent that he is. But, you know, another thing to mention in, you know, Wanted Dead or Alive is, like we said in the beginning, it's kind of like that breakthrough, that cowboy metal. You know, that was like the beginning of like the cowboy metal and the acoustic stuff. And, you know, and it's funny, there's different eras where Bon Jovi does this song. You know, like they do it in 92 when they're promoting Keep the Faith. And it sounds so good. And Richie kind of does a little more of a solo. It's got a little bit of a Spanish vibe to it or something like that. Or maybe I'm thinking of Living on a Prayer. That classic performance, like Bon Jovi does work like in that element pretty good. But this is a great performance. And I really, to go back and watch it, I recommend everybody to do that because you're really going to be blown away about what kind of singer Richie Sambora is. It's awesome.
Totally.
All right, number two, this is where I got docking, One Night Live.
A lot of bands went up the ladder, got famous, and then the 80s kind of peaked out and everybody's done with the hair, and they started going down the ladder, and the record sales were dropping off, and they broke up.
Then the real reason everything fell apart was I was on Geffen, and they signed Nirvana, and they kind of saw the same thing, like, oh, Dawkins, a hair band. You're old school. You're 80s. You know, this is the new... You got to remember, 91, it was Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, you know, all the grunge bands came out, and everybody said, well, the 80s bands are done.
I gotta go buy a flannel shirt and stuff. Here's Aquanet.
From 1997. I'm not sure if we mentioned that before. Maybe we did. But no. It's awesome. You know, one thing that you didn't mention that I just want to throw out there is that, you know, Don is actually still sounding pretty good.
He is, very much.
You know, he's got it. He's sounding good. Oh, you're right, man. I love Tooth and Nail with Mick Brown singing, and I love when Jeff sings, and it just sounds really good. They do the three-part harmonies. They do Nowhere Man by the Beatles. In My Dream sounds great. It's Not Love.
Yeah.
Into the Fire. I mean, I'm telling you, like, it's just like one hit after another, and they all sound good. My only complaint about this album is that George Lynch is a cheater. He did not play an acoustic for most of this performance. He plays an electric, and it has mixed results. There's some times where it sounds kind of cool, but then it just sounds like he's shredding over friggin' acoustic music. So, so kind of a fail. My number one, I'll announce here shortly, this guy had it right when it came to playing lead acoustics. George Lynch kind of took the easy way out and played an electric. It is what it is. It adds a cool vibe, but I feel like he cheated.
Well, I'm sure George just isn't talented enough, you know?
He is. You know what, man? It just goes back to what we've all known. You know, he's a very unique individual. He does shit the way that he wants to, and he can kind of be difficult. They probably said, George, bring your acoustic. Screw that. I'm bringing my lecture. So
yeah,
it's just right. George will be George.
I'm a little too good on an acoustic. I'll just play electric.
Yeah, I don't want to play electric. It hurts my fingers.
Yeah, totally.
All right, man. I can't wait. I have no idea what it is. Number one, what is it?
All right. Well, let's see. I'm trying to make you guess here. Who else do I preach vocally besides Hardline all the time? And it's not Sammy.
you big Y&T guy. Hmm. But I don't know.
But it's not them this time.
I'm at a loss.
I'll give you another hint. He might have the record for hitting the highest notes besides Jim Gillette of any male singer.
Oh, it's got to be Mikey from Steelheart.
That's it, baby.
There we go.
So we got Steelheart doing Sheila from MTV Unplugged in Hong Kong, 1992.
Bowen, I'm lonely. She's always got a little time. Oh, little time for me. I got the bottle, yeah, the salt and lime. Oh, Sheila. Oh, Sheila. Sheila likes tequila. Say.
And it's just Mikey and the guitar player. They do three songs, and I chose the song Sheila because of his amazing performance at the end of the song. And if you're familiar with the song, he lets it rip, and it almost like a vocal solo, just he and a guitar player at the end for like the last minute and a half. So he does that in a small room with an acoustic guitar, sitting on a stool, and he nails the notes that could break glass right then, right there. And it almost looks like he's going to pass out. If you look at him, he kind of like closes his eyes and shakes his head like, oof, I'm almost done. Like, that was almost it. But he hits him great. And the other two songs are really cool. He does Mama Don't You Cry, which is just way too sad. And She's Gone, which is a good ballad off the first album. But Sheila took the cake for me because it's a rocking song that did well in this slow blues chug. And like I said, he did not let us down in hitting those epic notes. So, as usual, I preach my boy Mikey Steelheart.
Awesome, man. He's got a great voice. And like I said, he doesn't need any effects or anything. He can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my number one, it should be very simple. Do you want to take a guess? I'm sure you know what it is.
So, you said it's a guy that's good at playing acoustic guitar and is known for it.
Well, I didn't say he was known for it. I'm just saying he's the opposite of some of them. He's got it down, but the band has nothing. Like, it's not run by a guitarist. It's a band thing. So.
Oh, okay. So Yngwie's out.
He's out.
Okay.
What band do I love that had an unplugged album? Let's see. There you go.
Well, I was going to say Kiss.
Okay. All right. I'm proud of you. All right. So 1995, Kiss Unplugged. In a gambler, but I'm nobody's fool. And I sure know something. Sure know something. She showed me things they never taught me in school. And I sure know something. Sure know something. No one can make me feel the way that you do. And I sure know something.
I didn't like it. I still don't like it. I never understood about singing about how f***ed up your life is when everybody knows their lives are f***ed up.
I mean, this is my favorite band, but really, I'm honest. This is honest truth here. Out of all my list, Kiss smokes all of them. That's my personal opinion. I watched The Unplugged recently, and every time I see it, it blows me away. Now, Kiss, in all fairness, they were doing this for a while. They did a convention tour in 1995. I actually saw this convention tour in 1995 in New York City. And my wife and I were actually shown in Kiss's home video for The Unplugged.
Oh, wow.
They show some of that that concert and some of the different things that happened in New York City. And you can see us kind of like, I'm like waving my arms around and stuff at the camera. So you can see me. A young metal Mike is on that with hair. It's nice. But so they were working on this for a while. And I think a couple things that have happened with this whole performance is that, you know, Kiss really showed that they have great songs and they're great performers. And I think what happens is Kiss always kind of got lumped into, like, being an image band and they had to have explosions. And if they didn't wear makeup, they were nothing. You know, Kiss has gotten every stigma attached to them. But I think with Unplugged, they made a name for themselves as being proficient musicians and great songwriters. Paul Stanley is at the top of his vocal game. You know, the vocal performances that he does on here are just unreal. And even though it's not one of my favorite Kiss songs, just listen to him do I Still Love You on there. I mean, vocal gymnastics. It's amazing. Gene, never known for having the greatest voice, but man, go back and listen to something like World Without Heroes from The Elder. I mean, Gene's voice sounds great. He's playing great bass. Listen to Sure Know Something. His bass is amazing on that. Bruce Kulick's solo is so tasteful. He's not fumbling around on the acoustic like CC was. You know what I mean? It just sounds really tight and well done. And Eric Singer, he's adding to it. He's a great drummer, great singer. The whole thing has, you know, just three-part harmonies, and it just sounds amazing. And you probably would have problems with the song selection. I mean, I know you're not a big Kiss guy, but, like, if you were going to listen to Kiss Unplugged, you'd want to hear Lick It Up and Tears Are Falling. You know, they don't do any of that kind of shit. You know, they went back, and they really did pick songs that would be great for, like, the hardcore fan like me, because I never hear these songs live, and they all really transcend well into, like, an acoustic performance. So, good on That's Kiss. Cool. They really paid in tribute to, like, their 70s, you know, self. They didn't play anything from the 80s, and it was a good move, because, like I said, that it was 95. It was kind of over. Kiss, you know, Kiss has been lucky, because with the 90s, it's like this is when Kiss was, you know, starting to come across as like a legendary band. You know what I mean? Like 70s, a huge band. Then in the 80s, kind of like, you know, they're working their way back up to popularity. They're kind of copying what everybody else did. And then by the time you got to like the early 90s, so many bands were coming out just saying like, oh my God, Kiss changed my life. You know, Kiss influenced me. They did the tribute album where people like Lenny Kravitz are on it, and Extreme and Anthrax and Lemonheads and Gin Blossoms and Garth Brooks. You know what I mean? So Kiss really started to get that legendary status. And the last thing I'll say about this is, man, come on. This is what spawned the Kiss reunion. You know, they brought out the other members of the family. They brought out Peter. They brought out Ace. The audience went apeshit. Reunion tour, reunion tour. And when what happened the following year? The reunion tour. Yeah, but the unsung hero, though, that I guess what I was trying to get back to at the very beginning, or at least when I was talking about Dokken, is Bruce Kulick, man. Just such an underrated player. a tasteful player. Check out all his acoustical solos on here. Like, just none of that noodling nonsense that some of the other people try to do. He tailored them all to fit on an acoustic. He's able to do the bends and everything. I don't know how he does it, man, but I just give him a lot of credit. And the whole band's on fire. If you're not familiar with Kiss Unplugged, just listen to Sure Know Something. It's so damn good. It's a great song anyways, but to hear that acoustical rendition, so good. And my Kiss rant is over. It's over.
No, I get it, though. I get the 70s reference, because if you think about that, like, the in 93 to, like, 97 was, like, that time frame when 70s was cool again. Yeah, it became, like, not passé anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they really hit their stride. They did a hell of a job, like you said, with those song choices and kind of coming out to showcase the retro aspect of it all.
Yes.
And, yeah, it really catapulted the rest of that, and they embraced that reinvigoration of that hippie 70s-ish type of vibe. That, like, the styles were all coming out again. And, that was a pivotal album for them. I remember it very well.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was, you know, and it was funny because everything was building up to all this, because it was like they did the Kiss My Ass tribute album, and then, like, all these people are praising Kiss. Then they went on to do the convention tour where they brought, like, their old costumes and all this shit out of storage, and everybody was just getting back into that, like I said, that 70s nostalgia. I mean, the next logical step, of course, is to put the makeup on and do it. And they did. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad they did, and I got to see it. But, you know, the funniest thing that happens through all of this, if you listen to Gene on, like, Headbangers Ball in 94, if you read, I just read an interview from 94 in Kerrang with Gene. Oh, yeah, we're working on a new album, you know? And it was, like, funny because that album just kept getting shoved back and shoved back, because they knew that, like, this was their only play. You know what I mean? They were either going to play small theaters and clubs doing, like, the Kiss grunge album, or going to play stadiums doing the makeup, you know, 70s thing. So they made the right choice. And then in turn, that move set them up to just be kind of legendary status after that and forever. You know what I mean? So,
oh yeah.
All right. What's some of the honorables? I don't have many. What do you have?
No, I don't have many either. Like, yeah, like I said, I had Queensryche. I had a funny one. I was going to jokingly hit you with AC/DC on the Howard Stern show.
He was distorted. He plays distorted. I saw it.
Yeah. Of all bands, never to go acoustic. And they didn't. Angus was playing electric, but it was, you know, just the two of them. That was kind of funny. But I got MSG doing their 92 Japan thing, that whole album. Rat, I did not think did a very good job doing their Unplugged thing. It was just odd song choices, Born on the Bayou, that whole bit. Round and Round was awkward. I don't know. I didn't love it. And then I did also kind of flirt with the idea of putting that Whitesnake heat and were you flirting around with that too?
I was, but there was two major things that were holding me back. David Coverdale's got, like, this short, dark hair. He looks weird.
Yep.
And they look like they're playing in a nursing home. It's like all these.
Where the hell are they? There was like 15 folding chairs and, like, a little, like, fake plant. And I'm like, what is this shit?
It was so bizarre. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I'm like, nope, I can't do it.
I know. And it was just too slow and kind of boring. Like, yes, I get it. You're acoustic. You got to slow it down. But, like, I watched The Deeper the Love and I was like, maybe he'll do that. I don't mind. Like, kind of killer. He didn't at all. He actually, like, went way down in the range. Yeah. I was like, nope, not adding it.
No, I'm with you.
So those are my only honorables.
I was toying around with LA Guns. It's over now. They kind of do one that's kind of acoustic, except Tracy's playing an electric, but I guess George played an electric, so I don't know what the difference was. They're sitting down, so it had that vibe, but I was like, I was on the fence about it, but I really do like that song, and that is a cool performance. And then I think real late, I noticed Sabotage doing Sleep, but Chris Oliva, he's got an electric guitar, but it's clear it's not distorted. So is this kind of like, you know, some of them where, you just didn't know if they didn't really feel 100% acoustic like some of the other ones did. But, that's all I really have. The rest of them, though, I really like this, man. I think a lot of these are cool. it's just cool to kind of go back and watch those 90s performances for the most part. Most of these were 90s, and just cool renditions and just kind of stripped down, and you realize how good these artists were and how good the songs were.
Absolutely. Good luck with any of these current bands trying to pull this off.
Right. I don't want to hear the Greta Van Fleet acoustic album, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to hold my breath for that one.
All right, brother. Well, always fun. I think we'll have another good one here, hopefully.
That's right. Getting better and better.
All right, brother. Fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Well, it's time to say goodbye, my friends. I'm glad you stayed until the end. I hope that you've enjoyed the time we spent. And I know that I'll be back again. I don't know just how soon, my friends, until we meet again. Just think of me. Think of you. It was easier to say hello than to say goodbye. Now the bus is leaving once again. I'll be fine.